call this meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order, and I note that a quorum is present. And our first order of business is the approval of the minutes from Monday, January 30th, 2023. Do I have a motion for that, Representative Edelson?
Yes, so moved.
Any discussion to the minutes? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. So we have two bills on the calendar for today. The first bill will be House File 13, Representative Pinto. Hi, Representative Pinto. Welcome to the table, and would you please move your bill that House File 13 be recommended for re-referral to the General Register?
Madam Chair, that is my motion, placement on the General Register. Yeah.
Great. And you have an amendment, an author's amendment, the A11 amendment. Would you like to move that to get the bill in the shape you would like?
I would, Madam Chair.
Okay. And before we do that, discussion to the A11, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, I'm most interested in the A11 amendment on the language that begins on page 2, line 19. Can you just elaborate? This looks like we're trying to do something about the fraud Can you just elaborate on the may versus the must in that language?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Garofalo, for the question. I should note that whole section, starting at 2.8, so including the language that you've pointed out, is reflective of a proposal from the governor and the administration that would have it be that if someone is excluded from participation in a program operated by another agency, that the Commissioner of Human Services, which this is focused on, would be able to exclude that individual or entity from participation in DHS programs. That's not something currently that can happen. The language of 2.19 that you've specifically asked about relates to providing that power not just to a provider, vendor, or individual involved with excluded under a DHS program, but an associated individual or entity, which is a specifically defined term, and that's related to this proposal as well. Let me see if I can find the term for you. It's on page 3 then. And it's we want to make sure that funds are going to the use to which they're intended, and this is part of doing that. We want to make sure that we're allowing Minnesotans to thrive, which these programs do, and so that's part of that process.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we adopt the amendment, I just want to be clear. I want to understand some basic facts we can agree on. The first is, Representative Pinto, right now in the state of Minnesota, Are some of those people that are under federal indictment with the Feeding Our Future scandal, are they currently getting paid right now?
Representative Pinto, and I don't know if that's within the jurisdiction of this, what we're doing in terms of Representative Pinto's amendment, but Representative Pinto.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, yeah, Representative Garofalo, I'm no expert on that situation. I work, as you know, as a prosecutor outside of my work in the legislature, and I can't comment on cases I'm not involved in. I'm not sure Representative Garofalo or anything about that.
So, Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, if I could just explain, Representative Pinto, members of the committee, why this is relevant. So I think, as everyone knows, there was, the largest COVID fraud in the nation took place in Minnesota. And these individuals who are under federal indictment, there are several overlapping nonprofits and business entities that share the same addresses, share the same leadership. And Iran, can I have you move so I can see? Thanks. So there's overlapping businesses, overlapping addresses, and some of these individuals right now are, despite the fact that they're under federal indictment, right, despite the fact that they use tax dollars to buy condominiums in Kenya, despite the fact that they were using tax dollars to buy Mercedes and high-end luxury cars, are today still receiving payments from the state of Minnesota under the CCAP program. So, Madam Chair, that's why this is relevant is I had an amendment that I had drafted to stop that, And as I look at this language right here, it certainly looks like the commissioner may be able to stop that. The commissioner may choose to stop that. But given the fact that they're currently receiving payments right now, again, these are people under federal indictment that are receiving payments right now, some of them, it appears that this language that we're adopting will allow that to continue. You're saying you're not familiar with whether they're getting the money or not, whether these payments are taking place. You're the chair, you have jurisdiction over this matter. I would think this would be something that the legislature would be interested in, is that people under federal indictment right now are still being paid by the state of Minnesota. So as I read your language, I read it last night, it appears that this would permit that to continue to happen. You can comment and see either I'm mistaken or right, but if you don't know if they're getting paid now, I guess you wouldn't know whether the language in front of you would correct that or not.
Representative Pinto, and I'll just note too that the underlying bill, the 13th, we're talking about the CCAP program in the amendment, and I'll go to Representative Pinto. That may be a conversation for other committees as well too, but I'm going to Representative Pinto for this amendment and how it pertains to the underlying House File 13.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Garofalo, I know that the issue that you're talking about was actually identified by the Department of Education, was reported to the federal government, and the department took, in that case, it was the department actually taking steps. What this language does is permits the DHS commissioner to stop participation in the program. It's part of the reason that it's included in this amendment is that we want to make sure the commissioner does, in fact, have that power, a power that the commissioner does not currently have. If this amendment doesn't go on, and if this bill doesn't go through, then the commissioner does not have the power to in fact stop participation in the program by quote associated individuals or associated entities. So, Representative Garofalo, to my mind, if you're interested in addressing concerns like this, then I would think you'd be particularly eager to support this.
Madam Chair, just to be clear, my questions are completely related to CCAP. So this is entirely appropriate.
Representative Garofalo.
And Representative Pinto, your comments, you are misinformed and mistaken on many levels. Number one, the commissioner does have this authority right now because they have withdrawn this authority from some of the CCAP providers who are under federal indictment. They just haven't done it for all of them. The second thing, Representative Pinto, is there are individuals, again, under federal indictment who are being paid today. So the commissioner does have the authority to stop these payments. They have done it for some of them. They have not done it for others. So whether we adopt this language or not, it appears to be that it is just permissive. It's allowing this behavior to keep going on. And I would hope that you and the majority party would look at not just the language the governor has recommended, but look at something that immediately stops these payments, again, from going out to people who have ripped off money that was supposed to be for kids. Right? This is supposed to be to feeding kids, and they've used for luxury goods. And today, state dollars are going to these fraudsters right now. So I just hope the DFL majority can please do more than what the governor is recommending. So thank you.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll just say what the language does is it allows the commissioner to exclude participation in the program for people involved in this. So we want to pass this in order to make sure that, in fact, that exclusion can happen. So I guess I don't know what else to say.
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto. Again, this is happening. Like, the commissioner has already stopped some of the payments. That's happening right now. What is happening is others are not being stopped. So the language that's in front of you, this is the governor's language is fugazi. It's fufu. It's fufu dust. It doesn't do anything. They can stop this, and they can stop it today. So again, Representative Pinto, we can talk offline. They've already stopped some of these payments, just not all of them. And so simply changing it from may to must, or making changes pertaining to specifically federal indictments, it would seem very appropriate the DFL majority would be in alignment with that. So we can talk offline, Representative Pinto.
And Madam Chair, I look forward to certainly happy to do that.
Further discussion to the A11 amendment moved by Representative Pinto. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A11 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say nay.
No. No.
The motion prevails and the A11 amendment is adopted. Representative Pinto, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 13 fulfills an obligation that the state has to a certain extent to the federal government, much more to kids and families in our state. The state receives support from the federal government and puts in state funding as well to allow families to receive child care assistance so that families can, parents can work, parents can go to school, and so the kids can get the great start that they deserve. We know that investments in early care and learning are some of the very best investments that we can make as a state and as a society. The rate that is paid under our child care assistance program is based on a survey of providers, and that rate is directed to be the 75th percentile of that survey. That gives families a lot of options. We want to make sure that families can receive the support they need so they can go to work, so employers can expand, et cetera. Our rate has been far below that level, and what HF 13 does is set the rate at the 75th percentile, which has been the expectation all along. A number of other states are at that level. Our state has been significantly below it. With the amendment, the bill also provides for reprioritization of waiting lists to make sure that counties can get kids off lists and have families receive the care that they need. And then we certainly had a discussion about the proposal from the administration relating to limits on receiving public funds for those who have been excluded from other programs. Members, this is an important step for us to take, and we want to make sure that we do it quickly and get rates at the level they need to be, because the people who are doing this work are receiving poverty wages for doing some of the most important work in our society. So it's critical to do this, and I would be glad to have your support.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. And before we get to discussion for the bill, I think we'll take up the A3 amendment. Representative Garofalo, do you want to move your amendment?
Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, I assume you've seen the A3 amendment. This would accomplish the goal that I mentioned earlier. Rather than me offering it, will you be accepting this amendment if I offer it?
Representative Pinto.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, with respect, I would not be a supportive of the amendment.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to waste the committee's time by offering the amendment. I'll just reinforce what I said, that we are right now sending money to fraudsters, and the underlying bill just makes permissive authority to the commissioner. It doesn't do anything, and now we're increasing payments to those legitimate businesses, but also increasing payments to those who bought condominiums in Kenya with our tax dollars. So. I'm not going to waste the committee's time by voting or offering the amendment that the chair is against. I'll be voting against the bill, and I would encourage every member of the committee to do so as well. Thank you.
So the A3 has been withdrawn. With that, further discussion to the bill. Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Pinto, I was serving on your committee when this story and the problems with CCAP were being found out, and, you know, I'm a little frustrated, along with our lead in this committee, our GOP lead, in that, you know, there could be some really good opportunities to actually get after this. Neat in the sense that we have some technology that I think that could be helpful. And maybe I missed it in the bill, but are there anti-fraud measures such as electronic attendance, a system that was recommended by the legislative auditor?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm asking the page to pass out, Representative Heinzman. You've actually seen this before. This is a handout from the very first hearing of our committee in 2020 that talks about all the changes that were made in 2019. Now, I want to point out, members, we're going back 4 years now, but it's been brought up, so may as well talk about it. All the changes that were made in the child care assistance program relating to program integrity, and many, 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 many changes that we made at that point. And I recall, Representative Heinzman, you can take a look, but I recall you seeing that presentation and actually really praising that at the time in early February of 2020, and talking about how impressed you were with that work, which again was 4 years ago, that long ago. To answer your question, yes, there have been many changes made. There have been all the investments listed on the sheet that's being handed out right now. Nobody, and I think you would know this, Representative Heinzman, nobody wants to have money spent on babies and the people taking care of them more than me. I absolutely do not want money going to other uses, absolutely, condominiums in any country. And Representative Heinzman, with the changes that we made together a number of years ago now, I think we can feel quite confident that those program integrity measures are in place.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Pinto, specifically the anti-fraud measures that I was asking about, are they included in the bill, the electronic element there that could be monitoring attendance?
Representative Pinto.
Madam Chair, Representative Heintzman, that is not in the bill because, in fact, again, we made a whole lot of changes previously as listed on the sheet.
Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Pinto, I recall some of the conversation that we had over this back when the language is being proposed along. One of the things that was extremely frustrating, Representative Pinto, was on one occasion when we were trying to bring this issue forward, and you specifically corrected me when I brought up the issue of fraud in the program, and the statement was alleged fraud from you, Mr. Chair. I hope that we've come some distance from that time. I'm disappointed that the language doesn't get at this more aggressively, and so I will not be supporting it.
Further discussion. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, Representative Pinto, if you could walk through, since this is the fiscal committee, the fiscal note and how much you're increasing. We've got a little chart here, but we haven't really mentioned it much about what the base is and what the highest number is in the tails, of course, and where we're going to in 26, 27. There's included a chart here, but if you could just articulate that would be great. And then as you're doing that, if you could also let us know the bill path. And I see that there's quite a bit of activity in DHS. Did it go to that committee?
Representative Pinto, do you want to take the...
I'd rather have Mr. Berg from House Fiscal answer the first part of Representative O'Neill's question.
Welcome
Thanks.
To the committee, Mr. Berg. Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony to the question.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Doug Berg with House Fiscal Staff. Representative O'Neill and members, you should have in your packet a spreadsheet that is, slightly confusingly labeled the author's A10 amendment. There was one further iteration after it got posted, but it represents the A11 amendment, actually. If you go down, the increase in this appropriates both the base and the increase in rate for the two child care programs, MFIP and the BSF. If you look at lines 3 and 8, that's the increase in rate to the 75th percentile. Those numbers match up with the fiscal note that is also in your packet. And then there are admin costs on lines 13 and 16 that are related to implementing that. Then the base for those programs is found on lines 2 and 7. In addition, the bill adds the governor's initiative on fraud prevention, which are found on lines 14, 15, and 17. At the bottom, you'll see there are FFP, which is federal financial participation offset. We get some revenue for the federal government that offsets the cost. So you'll see at the very bottom, the net general fund cost on line 23 is $354.1 million in 24-25 and $592.1 million in 26-27. And I'll note that line 27, the bill also does a permanent reprioritization of the basic sliding fee wait list in statute. The cost of that is on line 27, but that is 100% federal funding, so it's not appropriated in this bill. That's kind of the summary, if there are any questions.
And Representative O'Neill, you had a second part of your question. I'll have Representative Pinto address that and then come back to Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative O'Neill was asking about the bill path. So the committee, the bill was heard in the committee with jurisdiction, which is Children and Families, which has jurisdiction over this portion of DHS, and since then came to Ways and Means.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we're going from, when I look at this chart, 106 million and some change, 106 million, almost 107 million to the outtails of 26-27 to just shy of 600 million. So from 106, 107 million to 600 million or almost 600 million. That's a lot. Okay. And so Representative Pinto, you're saying that the children's Children and Families Finance and Policy Committee has jurisdiction over this part of DHS. Did it also go to the larger committee of DHS?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure what you mean by a larger committee. Representative Knorr is the chair of the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. I don't know that it's larger than Children and Families. It's another committee, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. And it did not go to that committee because Children and Families has jurisdiction over this portion of DHS.
Okay, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Okay, so Representative Knorr's committee has no jurisdiction at all over this issue area.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, yeah, so the issues of child care are within the jurisdiction of the Children and Families Committee. Yeah.
Okay. Representative O'Neill, more another question, or are you?
I'm just going to ask one final question. I'm looking back at the fiscal notes, and there were actually two different fiscal notes. One that was done on the 17th and one that was done on the 20th, but it only had one committee hearing. So I'm just wondering if the author could explain why there's two separate fiscal notes when it had one bill hearing before I came here.
Representative Pinto, otherwise we could turn to fiscal.
Yeah, perhaps.
Would that be?
Perhaps so, Madam Chair. I'm trying to sort of remember the timing and all, but Mr. Berg may.
Mr. Berg, yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Madam Chair, members, Representative O'Neill, the original draft of the bill had a starting date of November 7th, I believe it was, of next year. Mm-hmm. And the 2A fiscal note changed that to August 14th.
Thank
you, Madam Chair. And just I should have noted that for members. And the thinking there was part of the reason to move this quickly is to be able to get the rate increase going quickly so we can assist the sector, which is in some considerable free fall, and we want to make sure folks are getting compensated adequately for the work they're doing.
Just one final.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. So in relation to Representative Garofalo's concerns and Representative Heintzman's concerns, if we have a bill that basically increases the amount of spending from $107 million all the way up to nearly $600 million, I certainly hope that we tighten up the language, Representative Pinto, to make sure that the agency must actually stop payments to those that are under federal indictment. That's an awful lot of money, over nearly $600 million in the tails, going from $100 million. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I had some questions regarding the DHS administrative costs. And I'm just had a couple of questions on line 13. Could somebody explain the state share systems dash rate? There are ongoing costs for that, and it seems help me understand, because I understand the adjustments on line 14 of 250,000 to go towards the program integrity. I'm assuming that's to update a software system. But what is line 13?
It looks like Mr. Berg has that, and you're looking at the spreadsheet. Is that correct, Representative
correct.
Scott, when you're talking about the line?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Mr. Berg.
And Madam Chair, Representative Scott, it is for IT systems the same as program integrity. Just in this case, there's an $18,000 upfront cost and an ongoing $4,000 a year maintenance cost, but it's the same. It's IT costs.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So lines 13 and 14 are both IT costs?
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, yes.
Okay, thank you. And then, thank you, Madam Chair. And then I'm curious because it doesn't appear prior to what is going to be happening in the out years that lines 12 through 18, those are all new costs, OIG staffing, staffing for program integrity. Those items were not in existence prior to this bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I mean, there are certainly DHS has systems costs and staffing costs at the central office. What is shown here are the new staffing and systems costs for this bill. So they have no base prior to this bill. And I should note that on the issue of the base for MFIP child care, it's 0 and 22-23 if you look on line 2, but there is a base for 24-25. The reason for that is that during the pandemic, the child care census decreased so much that the department paid for the MFIP childcare program entirely with federal funds during those 2 years. But if you'll look on under 24 and 25, you'll see that the base reoccurs in MFIP childcare. If you went before 22-23, there would be a base as well. It just during the pandemic, it went down so far that the federal costs, federal funds would pay for it all.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And one final question. So would it be possible for members of the committee to get a breakdown of what the admin costs were prior to this spreadsheet? Because there's really no breakdown of that for comparison purposes.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, I can get you some information on general admin at DHS. The admin costs that are here have no base because they didn't exist before this bill. There is no base for these items because they aren't in existence. There is other administrative base costs that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Burt sort of addressed my question, but I have kind of two things I want to ask. I'm just going to ask them both, and then folks can answer. I mean, Representative O'Neill was talking about going from 106 million base to almost 600, 592, and I don't think that really is completely accurate. I think Mr. Burt was referring to federal funds that are also being spent, so I wonder if he could give us a more complete picture of what that increase is. But the other part of my question is to Chair Pinto to just, and maybe you were going to do this as part of your closing anyway, but, you know, it's one thing to talk about the money, and I know this is a fiscal committee, but it's also important to understand what it's going to buy for us. And I hope you're going to give us a moment or two as we close to understand. You know, it is $592 million is a lot of money. There's no question about it, but it's all relative. And I think you can articulate very well kind of why we need to do this. Great and point. I know you're going to do that anyway, but I would like to hear from Mr. Burke.
Mr. Burke.
Madam Chair, Representative Liebling, if you look at lines 2 and 7, you'll see the base of the program in 24 and 25 and 26 and 27. That is approximately $223 million in 24, 25, and $362 million in 26, 27. The total expenditure to the general fund, the net expenditure in the two programs in 24, 25 goes up to about $350 million. And in the tails, it goes up to $491 million.
Representative Pinto, do you want to just wait and address that during?
I'll do that, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'll save that for the end.
Further discussion bill? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions, Representative Pinto. So. As our House staff accurately portrayed, fiscal year's 24 numbers can be deceptively low. But when you look at the annual appropriations beginning in fiscal year 25, we're seeing some pretty exponential growth in spending. Do you have any concerns of the fact that spending is growing this fast and that there's no revenue stream to the state of Minnesota that grows this fast?
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Representative Garofalo. I guess my real concern is the fact that we didn't make these investments decades ago, and I'm dealing with that in my work as a prosecutor. So, Representative Garofalo, no, I'm not particularly concerned. I'm happy to tie that in to help, as Representative Liebling pointed out about the value of this. Representative Garofalo, we spend 10 times as much money once the child turns 5. We know that this sector, we're incredibly dependent on it for the success of every single one of our districts, the businesses in our districts, the families in our districts. And so, Representative Garofalo, no, I'm not concerned about that. This is an investment that is absolutely critical for the future of our state.
Representative Garofalo.
Wow. Madam Chair, Representative Pinto, I appreciate your candor that you're not really particularly concerned about that. Not the answer I was expecting, but I appreciate that. So, Madam Chair, members, just to close and highlight for members, I did not call department staff down to testify, but we can state as a matter of fact, not as a matter of opinion, that right now, despite these federal indictments, we are making payments to corrupt, fraudulent individuals who are ripping the state off of Minnesota, ripping the taxpayers off of Minnesota. And under this bill, not only are we not taking the money away from them, we're giving them a rate increase. So I'm going to be voting no on this. I would just beg, Madam Chair, you and members of the DFL, can you just, I know there's a lot of money here, okay? I know that we got a big, huge budget surplus. I don't know of a pro-fraud, pro-rip-off constituency group in the state of Minnesota, okay? This is money. Every dollar that gets ripped off by the fraudsters is $1 that's less, that's not used to help kids for their intended purposes. Can you just please stop these con artists from being in business? Thank you.
With that, we will go to Representative Pinto for the last word on his bill. And I know last time there was commentary in ways about side chatter and laughter at things, and I just remind members of both sides of the aisle, this is serious business, that there are kids across Minnesota who need child care, and I know Representative Pinto is bringing this bill in good faith, believing he's doing the best he can for the children of our state. So with that, Representative Pinto, if you could please close us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Members who vote against this bill will be voting against authorizing the commissioner to cut off funds to those who have been excluded from other programs. If you vote against this bill, you're going to be voting against the possibility, if you look at subdivision 5, page 4, of withholding payments when there's a credible allegation of fraud. You can choose to vote against that if you wish. By voting in favor of the amended bill, you'll be voting in favor of authorizing the commissioner to take steps that are necessary to address concerns that you claim to be concerned about. Also, in my mind, at least as importantly, is that by voting yes to this bill, you will be ensuring that those who are doing the most critical work in our society are being paid slightly above poverty wages to do so. One-third of those who do this work receive public assistance themselves. A quarter experience food insecurity. This is disproportionately women and disproportionately women of color. This is the best investment that we can make is to invest early. I hear this from members all the time. And this bill, by voting yes, is a chance to fulfill that pledge and to do so making sure that funds are going to those who need it in the form of families and those who are doing this important work. So, Madam Chair and members, I'd be grateful for your support. Thanks.
And with that, Representative Pinto renews his motion that House File 13, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 13, as amended, has been re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Thank you, Mr. Berg. The next bill on the agenda for today is House File 444, Representative Keeler. Welcome to the committee. Good to see you on a Monday morning. Making the drive down from Moorhead for this bill, I bet. So we're glad you're here. And with that being you're not on the committee, I will move that House File 444 be re-referred to the General Register and proceed with your bill overview.
Hey, Honey Watch Day. Good morning, members. Today I'm in front of you with a bill that actually stems from the work that Chair Gomez and I did last session. We were lucky enough to actually have a preventing homelessness division that we spent 2 years extremely dedicated to understanding what the needs of Minnesota were from border to border. It was an interesting combination, understanding that homelessness impacts the entire state. Often there is a lot of messaging around just the cities, but as your greater Minnesota member, border city member, I'm here to tell you that we experience homelessness across this entire state at detrimental numbers. January, we always do a point in time count, and I think just for reference, it's fair to understand that this is absolutely the floor of the number. If any of you have participated in the January point in time count, you're just finding people that day that it is absolutely, we know that there's more people than this in the state of Minnesota who are experiencing homelessness, but that number last year was 7,917. What that means is that people are sleeping in these really cold winters. What it looks like in my community is people actually carve out holes in big snow piles and fill them with blankets just to try to stay warm because they're out of the wind. I am sure many of us had a warm home to go to this weekend. We probably woke up this morning and showered, had food, had all of those things that allowed us to show up here to be the best Minnesotan that we can be. What happens when you don't have that experience? As many of you know, I worked as a Native American liaison for 12 years. For 41 years, I've been walking in this world as an Indigenous woman. We sit at many tables that we hear about the disparities that people who look like me experience. Homelessness is massively one of them. So I'm coming to you today with what I believe is a solution of things that have been working, creating a vehicle to move forward to actually start the investment in preventing homelessness. You all are a very powerful group of people. You lead tables and conversations that impact education, healthcare, public safety, and the list goes on and on. I implore all of you that as we talk about preventing homelessness, you take it back to your tables and understand that all of you have an opportunity and a requirement to invest in ending homelessness in Minnesota. It doesn't matter who is at the table of leadership at the time. Each one of our constituents, each one of our communities, and the entire state of Minnesota need us to show up for each other. So with that, I'm going to briefly walk through the bill and understand why I believe that this is actually the vehicle to head down a path for Minnesota to be better at housing our individuals. So the first thing we know is that we need funding in capital shelter. If we don't actually build the brick and mortar, we can't actually save lives. So the first part of it is one-time funding for $150 million that would be available through 2028. This would go through an RFP process. One of the things I added is that there is an element of 40% of this money is required to go to Greater Minnesota. Again, your Greater Minnesota member understands that if we don't provide the supports in Greater Minnesota, they just end up funneling to the city. And we do better when we're in our own communities as we want to thrive and get reconnected. We can't build a vehicle without adding wheels, and so the emergency service program is actually designed that would be a $20 million ask with $35 million ongoing because we can't build a system without wheels to move forward. These are grants that have help ongoing supports, staffing, and different resources that each community and shelter would need. So once we save individuals from a night of being out in the cold, then we help them understand the opportunity to transitional housing. This is a 36-month process that helps individuals like me who maybe just didn't have generations before me to teach me how to fiscally be sound, or I didn't have generations before me teach me how to be a homeowner. Transitional housing is an effort that actually helps people move from homelessness into long-term housing. That's what we want to do. That's what increases our accessibility. We also know that we have a massive amount of youth, and when we talk about youth in this capacity, with our Homeless Youth Act, it's actually supporting individuals aged 24 and below. So one of the things that we did is we did a pilot program. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Close-Knit or Chosen Families. It's actually a housing opportunity for individuals between ages 18 and 24. So if you have somebody in that age range that would want to stay with you, it would just be grant opportunities to offset some of those costs. So if you're housing somebody in your home, and they're taking more showers or eating some of your food, it would just be small grants to help offset that, to maybe stop them in that bridge of ending homelessness. It's a pilot program so that we can look at it over a year and see if we think it's successful or not. That would be our decision to make as a group. And then lastly, there's a piece of it that's the it's the HMIS, it's the Homelessness Management Information System. And understanding from the time that I've been in this work and also channeling a little bit of Representative Scott and knowing that if we're going to collect data on people, that there has to be real clear barriers of protection with that. I live in a world, again, as an Indigenous person, where data has been used against us in ways to know where we're at, to find us, to relocate us. And so I'm extremely sensitive to that. What I like about this system is it does have an opt-out option. So if I would show up at a shelter and I don't feel comfortable sharing my information with this system, I have the eligibility to opt out. What this is, it's actually a federal requirement for us to utilize to track our systems and to know what's working well and not working well. It just doesn't come with any funding. So this would just be allocating funding to go to that HMIS system to offset that funds to actually be able to support the communities. So members, I know that this isn't everything. I know that there is so much more that we all need to invest in to end homelessness, but I and others really believe that this is a strong vehicle to move forward, to work collectively to end homelessness. Happy to answer any questions. It's pretty straightforward. I believe that the investment is absolutely worth it, and this is how we make a stronger, thriving Minnesota in the future. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. And we'll go to member discussion, and just noting we have both the fiscal note and the tracking document that Representative Keeler just walked through in her discussion of the bill overview. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. Question for you. In subdivision 5, line, subdivision 6, my apologies, lines 2.18 through 2.22, you over 2 years appropriate $2.597390 million to administer these grants. Given the recent report from the OLA regarding grants management, do you have any intention of tightening that up, shoring that up, putting some guardrails around how those grants are administered? And I'm sure most of us, if not all of us, have read that report with great interest, and yet I don't see anything here, and I'm hoping that you would take heed of that report and go down that road, because $2.3 million $2.6 million is a lot.
I don't hear a question there, but I
asked her if she was going to address that in a future iteration of this bill.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, this is the bill as it is. I'm absolutely open for more conversations if there's things that you'd like to offer to add for the guardrails in that piece. I trust our agency, and I trust that what they've informed us of as far as their ability to get this money out is appropriate and what they will do.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and that was not the answer I was looking for or I had expected, actually. The OLA report was eye-opening, I think, for all of us, that the inability of the administration and administrations over time to administer grants has been woefully lacking, and it seems that it would be something that an author who had been plugged into what's going on would do themselves. It's not my job to administer or to amend your bill, since I'll be voting against it, but I think that it would be good authorship to amend that in. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author. I was on the Prevention of Homelessness Committee with Chair Gomez last year, and I asked quite often this question I'm going to ask you, and so she probably already knows what it is. But you said in your opening statements that this bill will prevent and eliminate homelessness, and it's important that we do everything we can for that purpose, of course. But the question that I'm going to ask is, where in this bill does it actually prevent the situation that caused the homelessness? And the reason why I say that's important is because if we don't deal with that, we're going to have continually growing numbers that are going to need this service. And yes, your bill provides shelter for those that are homeless, and so it prevents them from being homeless tomorrow, but it didn't do anything to prevent them from being homeless in the past. And so my question is there anything in this bill that would actually address the situations that they found themselves in that allowed them to be homeless?
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Petersburg, I think that it's important to understand that, again, kind of what I said is that all of us sit at tables that are a part of preventing homelessness. This really is just a small component of it. I do think that there's a piece in the preventing homelessness around the transitional housing, is that we do support individuals through shelter to save lives that night. But then the transitional housing component allows people the education that they need to be able to be successful in long-term homeownership. Granted, that's a small piece of it. There's many. This is a much bigger conversation that I would, I mean, I would use all the money that we had to invest in all the issues, you know, that are around lack of access to health care, you know, our mental health supports, our behavior, our substance abuse. The list goes on and on of all of the areas that we need to invest in. This is really just a small component of it.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and And thank you for that question. And yes, your transitional housing does help them learn how, from this point forward, to help. But we haven't done anything with the real root cause that happened before that. And that, as you said, indeed is a difficult situation. But part of it is our own regulatory system and how, as a state, we have increased the cost of housing just because of what we wanted to do in regulations. And we aren't addressing any of that here as well. And I understand that may not be the direction of this particular bill, but when you had indicated in your opening statement that this would eliminate and prevent homelessness, I just wanted to caution us to say dealing with it after the fact is good, but dealing with it beforehand is even better. Medical field has found that out, that it's much easier to deal preventively than it is with after the fact. And I think we need to consider that as an issue as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Gomez.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few things. First, to Representative Petersburg, and I do actually, it's weird because I have my back to you talking to the mic, but I'm looking at you in some way. so I do appreciate you bringing us back to and asking people who came in front of our committee about how it is that we actually prevent homelessness. And there are a few realities that are in our world right now. One is that we have a critical shortage of housing, period. We have a critical shortage of housing that is affordable to families in this economy. We have a situation where housing prices and the price of literally everything else has just gone up and up and up, and wages have stagnated in our country for 30 or 40 years. Every gain that workers make in our economy gets offset by like a $5 a dozen of eggs, right? So, you know, I mean, I don't believe that Representative Keeler, in fact, I'm positive that she did not say that this would end homelessness. This, you know, it's a lot of money, right? It's $350 million. It's a really significant investment in people in our state who are struggling. But nobody is under any illusion that this alone will prevent or will end homelessness. It will prevent homelessness for people. And I want to say, people who are homeless today, if we can get them into shelter, if we can get them into transitional housing, especially, you know, we learned a lot about shelter during the pandemic. We learned a lot about what actually works in shelter during the pandemic. And the way that we've been doing shelter hasn't had a great ultimate placement rate, like a permanent placement rate for people. But when you sort of more intentionally design shelter to meet people where they are, 24/7 shelter where people can bring their belongings, where they have a door they can close, where, you know, where they can bring their partners and their pets, people end up in housing. I mean, you can see this if you look at the placement statistics during COVID, especially in Hennepin and Ramsey. I mean, really amazing work is happening. So, you know, but spending a few $100 million, right, to prevent the people who are currently homeless from being homeless in a week or a month or a year is not going to, like, prevent homelessness writ large. We have huge problems in our economy, in the realities of working people in our country, with rising costs, with lack of availability, particularly of affordable housing. I think I'm turning to Representative Howard. I mean, is it 50% of renters who are cost burdened, or 30%? I can't remember. It's
lots
of renters, right? That means that people are spending more than a third of their income just on their housing costs. So, like, think about what that would mean for your personal economy. So I just want to say I appreciate that, but it's like, this bill is not going to solve the housing and economic issues that have gotten us to where we are, which is a place where more and more people are falling through the cracks in our economy. Secondly, I want to speak just briefly to Representative Nash's questions about the OLA report. Now, if there's anybody in this committee that has not spoken to their local homelessness service provider about what it was like during COVID, I would urge you to go and talk to them. We had a situation where, you know, just this unprecedented global pandemic. We were operating with really imperfect information, but what we had was an emergency homelessness system
that mostly had people in congregate settings, a lot of medically fragile people in congregate settings, sleeping together in, you know, a gymnasium, breathing the same air. And we didn't know, especially in March of 2020, I mean, we didn't know what we were facing. And if you were serving in office during that time, you remember just the intensity and all of the questions that we all had to answer, again, in the context of not knowing exactly what we were facing. But our emergency homelessness response programs across the state of Minnesota, like, did this incredible, fast transformation and saved people's lives. And the emergency services program, which was one of the focuses of the OLA report, went from a base, I believe, it was less than $2 million, between $1 million and $2 million, to that turned out to be one of the main ways that federal COVID funding got into our communities was through this program that previously had moved about $1 million out every couple years. And they moved tens of millions of dollars through that program out into the community, allowing our emergency shelter providers to move people into hotels, to isolate medically fragile people, to protect elders, to protect people who were sick with COVID. Okay, and they did that. And read the OLA report. What they said was they found not one dollar, not one single dollar that had gone to a purpose other than helping to support our emergency shelter providers to save people's lives. What they did find was that in the course of moving from getting $1 million out into our community to, I believe it was like 65 or so million dollars out into our community, that there was, with I will add, no additional staff, right? DHS didn't add staff. They didn't have the ability to add staff to do that work. They had to make it happen. There were some paperwork things that did not happen, right? And the commissioner came forward and said, yeah, there were some, like, you know, some of them were more serious than others, I think. I think there was some, like, you know, conflict of interest stuff that everybody wants to make sure happens. There was also, like, this piece of paper didn't get placed in this file properly, right? But I just will say that I want to extend some grace to those providers who, again, made sure that Minnesotans didn't die, that we did not have a mass casualty incident of our most vulnerable and medically fragile people in the state. And I want to thank DHS for that work. And I would just reiterate, there was no finding from the OLA that there was any misspent dollars, any, you know, actual, like, funds that went somewhere they weren't supposed to go. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we do have quite a list. So before someone gets a second bite at the apple, I'm going to make my way through the list, but I will put you at the bottom, Representative Nash. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill. And I really appreciated, Chair Gomez, your comments. I had the opportunity to serve on the Preventing Homelessness Committee last year, and I thought what both you as Chair, Representative Gomez, and you as Vice Chair, Representative Keeler, did, which was so extraordinary in that committee, is you brought people directly impacted by this issue to the committee. We heard their voices. We heard their concerns. And I just want to speak to subdivisions 3, 4, and 5 on page 2, because I think I'm particularly pleased that this is included. I did have the opportunity to, in the interim, to visit two facilities in the district I represent that deal specifically with homeless youth. And one is called The Bridge. And, you know, Chair Gomez, you're absolutely right. I mean, people did heroic work and continue to do heroic work every day under very, very challenging circumstances. And so to have this grant opportunity available, particularly for homeless youth, I think is really, really important. And then finally, Madam Chair, and I know you're familiar with this in Duluth, I've talked about this a lot in the Preventing Homelessness Committee, the transitional housing program. One example there is called the Steve O'Neill Apartments. And in addition to being named after a close friend and mentor of mine, Steve O'Neill, This is a way, actually, to prevent homelessness, because what this transitional housing facility offers is wraparound services. So you're helping people with jobs. You're helping with childcare. You're helping with education. They even have a garden so people's food needs are addressed there. And people stay there for an extended period of time. And then after they have lived there, they go on and are successful and are in our place in permanent housing situations. So this makes a huge difference in people's lives. I can't think of anything more urgent and more important, and I appreciate the bill and strongly support it.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Representative Keeler, could you walk me through subdivision 4 on the homeless youth part and just touch on the fact that you already brought up one question that I had, and if you can just clarify, it's just for persons that are 18 to 24. How do you apply for the grants, and are there grant limits?
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Novotny, the chosen family grants, as it was presented to us through that organization, the limit is $300 through the grant. As far as if you have somebody living with you in those ages, that would be the limit to that each individual could apply for through DHS.
Representative Novotny.
And thank you, Chair Olson. And Representative Keeler, are there any... How do they apply for the grants? How do they get that? How do they know about it?
Representative Keeler.
Chair Olson, Representative Novotny. It's just the RFP. It's an open application process that Chosen Family would then process and divvy out. The nice part about it is it's a one-year process. It's a pilot program for us to come back and look at to see if there's different ways or different elements that we would want to add, like if $300 maybe wasn't enough. We know that the cost of living is going up in many different areas, that cost of water, cost of food, cost of those offsets, we could review in a year.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Olson. I just have concerns that there's, and the Representative Keeler did address several of those. I just want to make sure that this isn't subverted, so I'd like to keep in touch with you and please work with me on this program in the future.
Chair Olson, Representative Novotny, I would absolutely be open to work with you. I've said that throughout the last 3 years working on this. I am extremely passionate around this topic and am deeply open to more ideas, so I will take you up on that.
Thank you. Representative Knorr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill forward. Members, this is an overdue. If you haven't seen the number of people who are sleeping on the streets, if you recall last week and this entire few months, that the weather was so cold that there are individuals within the state of Minnesota who don't have a home. In my own district, we had the largest encampment for more than 200 individuals in a state-owned facility that was disbanded. If we can't take care of those who need the most, who are we taking care of? If we don't do the right thing, the moral approach of providing a home, a place to put a head and have a place that we can use the restroom and just do like any other regular person, then we're not helping anybody. This is the moral obligation that we are sent here to do. You know, homelessness, as I've said, is not hopelessness. Homelessness is not helplessness. And I want everybody to know today, this is an important issue. If you haven't seen homeless individuals in your district, they're coming to our district. I want you to work with me so we can go to them and ask them why they're there. Some of them have got mental health issues. Some of them have got substance use disorder. There are many issues that they're dealing with. So members, I think we should do the appropriate thing and move this bill forward so we can save lives, because homelessness is also deadly. You should have seen the report that was issued by the Department of Health about homelessness that just last week. And the cost that we're spending just to keep people in the hospitals because they don't have a place to go to. This is a small drop in the bucket that we're doing to solve a problem that we haven't done anything in the last few years. And I think to address the issue of the OLA report, we have seen the response, we understand the issues, and quite frankly, the safeguards that were put in place by the department in terms of making sure the public funds and assets are protected, that there's no fraud, waste, and abuse, is quite frankly admirable because they did the right thing. And they went back and fixed all those issues that they were required to comply with the paperwork necessary to do this work. So there wasn't any, and I can assure you that was the information that we got from the hearings that we've had on this issue. And I hope members will follow up with the department to understand better, because that's something which they did. If you look at Subdivision 6, this is not a huge amount to make sure that we have a system in place. And quite frankly, I also appreciate the department putting a new grant management system that they're using as a tool to make sure that all the boxes are checked, all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted. And it's something that I appreciate the department has put forward. So I hope we will all support this bill. Thank you so much, Representative Keeler. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to thank Representative Keeler for bringing this forward and how thoughtful you were in putting these packages together and working with community to do so. And echo Representative Gomez that we all know that this isn't the silver bullet that's going to end homelessness. And I know you know that. And I know you said that. And just a reminder to all of us that the investments we make in education, workforce, healthcare, housing, all of that is part of preventing homelessness. And all of us around the table have a piece to play in that. I want to echo Representative Hornstein. I've also been with my community and looking at one of our transitional housing programs and watching how much that can break those cycles and build hope. I volunteered there. It's important for us to understand that this can't always just be a bandage approach, but we still have to stem the bleeding. As Representative Norris said, homelessness can be deadly. And I also agree with what he said about putting the cost in to actually do a system that operates. The OLA report, one of the number one things they said was, it's hard to manage grants when you don't have the money to do so or the systems to do so. That's an overall discussion we're going to have to continue to have. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for this bill, and I look forward to us doing a lot of good work together to invest in our human infrastructure this session.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Chair Olson, and thank you, Representative Keeler, and I really appreciate the conversation. You know, I think a proposal like this brings to mind what housing advocates have shared with us, sort of the maxim that shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness. Your bill will save lives, and that is an element of our work, our journey to end homelessness. This is the first step on that path, and so thank you for bringing it forward. And it is so urgent we take this step, and just members have highlighted this, but can't underscore how much outside of these walls this is a crisis for Minnesotans. Last year in Hennepin County, there was a 268% increase in families experiencing homelessness. And that spike is happening all across the state. There were 20,000 evictions filed last year in Minnesota, and we're now at a spike level well above pre-pandemic levels. And I did look up the statistic, Representative Gomez. 590,000 Minnesotans are paying more than 30% of their income in housing, and more than 200,000 Minnesotans are paying more than 50% of your income in housing. And so to the question about how do we prevent homelessness, the number one cause of homelessness is Minnesotans not being able to afford their home. So that's going to require a lot of work amongst everyone around this table to solve these challenges. But the first step, we should not fiddle in this body while Minnesotans are literally freezing without a home. And that's why this bill is so urgent, and I'm so glad the Representative Keeler is moving it forward. And that does bring me to a question. And I'm wondering if you could speak to the practical impact of moving forward on a bill like this now versus waiting. And what is going to be the impact for Minnesotans by us addressing this urgent need quickly in this legislative session?
Representative Keeler.
Chair Olson, Representative Howard, thank you for asking that question. As we do the work in shelters and making sure that we prepare to the best ability that we can, we're always fighting against winter. That's always the one piece that we're looking at. We want to keep people in warm places when it gets cold in Minnesota. We all know that. And so the outline for us to be able to set up the RFP processes for the grant, to be able to post and to hire the staff that we need to get this off the ground and going in a really strong, effective way, there's always like a six-month time frame lapse. So the reason why there's some urgency in this now is if we can get this moving and we can get it into law and moved, we are on a path to make sure that we have the implementation in place to protect people as early as September, which, as we know, that is a good time of year, versus waiting until May. We wouldn't be able to implement things until end of November, early December, which is actually where we start to see really high levels of death because of homelessness.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Cleburne. Thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill. And from a member from Greater Minnesota who has zero homeless shelters in the entire county, I only represent a portion of Wright County, but there's not a single homeless shelter in the entire county. And I used to work quite a bit in the nonprofit sector, at several, but within Wright County at several, so there. And one of them was the Buffalo Food Shelf, and we would see the need tremendously. I remember in 2006 when the housing crisis and crash was coming, and we actually saw it probably first in Wright County just because of population, and there were a lot of trades guys that lived there. So I saw it happening in 2006 at the food shelf, and then, of course, it just grew exponentially after that, and I've encountered it for decades myself, just not myself personally, but just within my community. So I appreciate that, and my questions are no way reflective of that, and I think we have five, almost floor speech-like of support on your side of the aisle. But I'd like to get back to the bill itself. Mm-hmm. That's why we are here. So my question is actually, I have a couple questions, and I'm just going to ask them so that we can kind of speed it up a little bit. But was there a fiscal note available for the first fiscal committee? And I have the notes in front of me. That would have been Representative Nora's committee, Human Services, Finance. Do you know if the fiscal note was available for the first fiscal committee to review and reflect on? Because this is quite a lot of money, and it looks to me like you're standing up a new program. I don't see any money in the 2023. So I'm looking at the fiscal note that has been provided. And in 2023, I don't see any costs. So I'm assuming from that we're standing up a new program. So one, was the fiscal note available in the first fiscal committee, which would have been Human Services? And then the second part of my question is, we've mentioned a lot of things in here, as in standing up the homelessness management system, which is an IT system, a data management system. Did this go to judiciary, where they also deal with data practices? Did this go to capital investment? It has $150 million of capital investment. Did it go to capital investment? It relates directly to housing, as it's a homelessness committee, and we no longer have a preventing homelessness committee. So did it go to the housing committee? And my final question is, did it go to the public safety committee? Because I have not looked at the Wilder study, the point in time homelessness report as of this year. I know they just compiled it. I'm not sure if it's released, but I haven't seen it. But when I looked at last year's, there was approximately 8,000 that were homeless, and about 4,000 of the 8,000 had been recently discharged from the DOC, Department of Corrections. And so did it go to any of those committees? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we'll get to the questions. I believe Mr. Harney is here to, he could speak to the fiscal part of it. I know just enough to be dangerous, having worked at a shelter, that HMIS is a word I've heard for a long time. I don't think that's new. I don't think emergency shelter programs are new. So again, I know just enough to know to be dangerous, but none of those are new programs. We're not standing up a new tech thing in this bill. And I will note at the top of the bill did go to Human Services, Children and Families, were in Ways and Means, and has followed bill path as needed. But with that, I'll turn to Mr. Harney to talk about the funding in, I believe the question was in why not 2023 and why are 2024 and beyond.
I'll take the first question, Cherylson, about the fiscal note's availability in committee. Representative O'Neill, the bill, the fiscal note was not available in Representative Nora's committee. It was available in Children and Families for the hearing. The account that the bill touches on and is funded through exists through Children and Economic Support Grants that are underneath Children and Families jurisdiction. The bill is slightly different than the bill you all heard before this, where they're setting the base, the current law base, and then appropriating the change. What this bill is doing is, in fact, just using the current law program and appropriating new money and a new base on top of it. So there is current law appropriations to emergency services grants, the Homeless Youth Act, and transitional housing. But what this bill is doing is creating new appropriations and new base in addition to the current law base amounts that exist today.
And Mr. Harney, I'm sorry, I didn't ask you. Will you identify yourself
yes.
for the record?
Joe Harney, House Fiscal.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if fiscal staff then could explain how much is new and how much is base.
Mr. Harney.
Chair Olson, Representative O'Neill, in anticipation of that question, the current law base for emergency services program, emergency services grants, is $13,688,000 in fiscal year 24-25. The Homeless Youth Act base is $11,024,000 in 24-25. And the base for transitional housing is $6,368,000 in fiscal year 24-25. I've not done the math on the difference or the additive effect of that, but that's the current law base.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So when we add up 24-25, according to the fiscal tracking note I have in front of me, the total net fiscal impact is 229, so almost 230 million. Of that, 150 million is in capital investment for emergency shelter facilities. And then it goes down in the tails because that's a one-time appropriation for $150 million, and it goes down to basically $124 million. Do you happen to know the difference between the numbers you just said from the base and the let's call it $230
million? Mr. Harney.
Representative Keeler's showing me a chart here. I'll defer to her to answer that one.
Representative Keeler.
Okay. Chair Olson, Representative O'Neill. I was looking at my fancy sheet here. So you want to know what the total base is with where the original base was, what this bill would add on top, yep. and where we land with the total base then, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so ESP with the addition, so we have $40 million in 2024 with $70 ongoing, so that would be $83. 688 in the tails moving forward for ESP. Homeless Youth Act originally is 1124. We're adding 40 in the tails, which would make it 5124 ongoing. Transitional housing so the ongoing for that will be 15968.
Thank you. Madam Chair, so I'm wondering if I could, if the author would talk about that. I can see the bill path, so I can see that it didn't go to capital investment, the housing committee, judiciary committee, or public safety, and what if she could just address why none of those committees were a stop.
I can give that to Representative Keeler. I will say, having served in this body long enough, and I think some of my colleagues talked about this, housing and issues around homelessness are tricky, even though it sounds like house or home. Like, a lot of it lives within the DHS world. A lot of it lives within different spaces, capital investment, taxes. I mean, you can't look at this. So I think Representative Keeler can speak to the bill path. I think something for all of us to keep in mind is that's probably why so many chairs just spoke on this issue, is because it does, depending on what elements we're looking at, and this is specifically around homeless programming. And so with that, Representative Keeler can speak to that.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Representative O'Neill. So it's actually one of the things that when we created the subdivision last year, originally it was housed under housing. then we did realize that a lot of the services and the supports that we provide in preventing homelessness were under HHS, which was massive at the time. And now with all of the new jurisdictions and where the line items were, 100% of this funding goes through children and families, which is why we heard it in Human Services and Children and Family. We didn't hear it anywhere else.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you actually did hear it in Human Services Finance with Representative Noor's committee. That's where it started, but it didn't have a fiscal note available for his committee to review and discuss the changes. Then it did finally go to Children and Families, and now to hear. Okay, I just wanted to hear why we are not going through some of these other committees, as we talked about a lot of the things just in here today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Neal, and thank you for bringing us back to the numbers of the bill. We appreciate it. This is definitely one that I think gets a lot of people in a lot of different ways, and it's an important conversation we're having. And with that, we don't have too much time left, and I have a couple people on the list, so we'll do Representative Nash, Representative Hassan, and then Representative Garofalo to close before we go to Representative Keeler for the last word on the bill. Representative Nash.
Thanks, Madam Chair, and this will be brief. Just wanted to address when my name was mentioned regarding my intent about asking for guardrails and processes to be put up. Even though the outcome of the previous money may have been great, my wife is an industrial engineer, and I was her study buddy when she was finishing her last year, and the continual theme that came out of that was process drives improvement. And even though something may have happened well in the past, doesn't mean that it necessarily will without some intervention and guardrails put in proactively. We do this every day. We do it on the highway, Representative. And you know, Hornstein, we do that all the time. We try to make proactive measures to make sure that down the road, things don't go awry. So don't infer that I was saying anything bad about the department. I'm saying the OLA report was quite clear that grant management really is a great area for improvement. That was my admonition, and I was a little surprised that even in deference to the fact that it came out, we are not doing that with this bill. So once again, process drives improvement.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Rep. Keeler, for this bill, and also thank you, Rep. Gomez, for all the work that you have done as a former chair of Preventing Homelessness. I have no concern on spending this money on our most vulnerable. It's our children. It's our families who are struggling. It is vulnerable people, people who are experiencing mental health issues, people who are experiencing opioid crisis, people who are running away from domestic abuse. So this is the right thing to do. I encourage everybody to go and visit a shelter or volunteer at a shelter. If there is no shelter at your district, consider this an invite, an open invite to my district and other districts that have shelters, encampments, and high presence of people experiencing homelessness. I walk around in my district, and I will meet somebody who's experiencing homelessness, somebody who is having maybe ODing on the street. The presence and the need for this money is visible in my district and other districts. And I volunteered at a homeless shelter. Not as often as I love, but as much as I can, because this work keeps me busy. And I guarantee you, every time I talk to somebody and I say, where are you from, they are highly most likely to say that they're not from Minneapolis. They're from suburbia. They're from greater Minnesota. They're from other states trying to move to Minnesota. So the problem that we really think that homelessness is an urban core issue is far from the truth. I have a friend who came from Norway, and he was visiting here, and I shared this in housing, and I'll share it again. I think it's really suitable for this space. And he said, can I go see your district? There is Norway House in my district. So we started with the Norway House because he's Norwegian. And we went to tour my district, and he saw the encampment. He was horrified. He was like, why are there people sleeping outside? I'm like, well, they don't have a place to sleep. That was shocking to him, because in Norway, everybody has a right to housing and health care. He was like, what kind of society are you guys? I'm like, I don't know. It's a society that lets people sleep outside. And
As cold as it has been, that we've been cranking up our heaters because it's too cold, or we're, you know, putting in, you know, extra blankets. People don't have that. They're sleeping outside. They don't know if they're going to make it through the night, or if they're going to freeze to death. The other night, I think it was Friday night, the night that was super cold, I was, you know, I spilled something in my car and I tried to clean it without gloves. I came back to my house and I'm like screaming. My son was like, what happened to you? I'm like, my hands are frozen. And, you know, at that moment, I realized like the luxury I have coming into my house and trying to warm up my hands, but some people don't. This is the right bill to do. This is the right money to spend on the right issue. And I will, Madam Chair, I will request a roll call for this bill.
A roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, in my role as the minority lead in this committee, I'm going to exercise my purview to assign a homework assignment to members of the committee. I know that you totally authorized that, so.
As the minority lead, I think, well, we haven't heard the homework assignment yet.
This close. I would, and I'm sure that there are some members who represent Minneapolis who've done this already. If you have a chance, you should take a morning or an afternoon, and you should go visit the Avivo Village in Minneapolis. What this is they are providing services to clients who are extraordinarily troubled. Okay, many are battling substance abuse, mental health issues, and their primary focus is just to get people out of tents. And I hear the term, they use tiny houses. I think it's kind of a pejorative term. But what they're just trying to do is get people indoors, sleeping on beds during the day, eating, just getting, because if you're sleeping 2 or 3 hours a day, whatever mental health issues you're having are just being exacerbated. This is an extraordinarily difficult population. And if nothing else, from a public policy standpoint, one of our responsibilities as legislators is just to understand the diversity of problems and people in our state. And as you know, I'm a white boy from Farmington, right? If I don't go seek this stuff out, I ain't gonna see it, right? So I would encourage people. For me, it was a moving experience to see people who are literally saving people's lives every day, dealing with what is and making very difficult choices, and I would just encourage people to do that. Now, Madam Chair, members, two things can be true. You can be supportive of programs while also acknowledging that there's current problems with how we're running things in Minnesota. I'm not going to ask the author to yield to this question, but I would like, before this bill was on the floor, I think it would be helpful if members of this committee had an inventory of the total amount of money that we are currently spending preventing and enacting and ending homelessness right now. I did a ballpark figure last night, but I don't feel accurate enough. I don't think it's accurate enough to say it, but if there's any way, Madam Chair, that you or I don't know if I can ask that or the author, that we could actually have that information before. I think people would be shocked to find out how much money we're currently spending across many departments in the area of homelessness. Is there a formal request I can do for that? Or Ms. Adrians, is that a good enough of a request I could ask for that? You could delegate. Okay, thank you. I think people would be surprised. And Representative Keeler, there's been a, I just got something that was passed over to me. Someone who's not in the room was popping off saying that somehow Republican members were being disrespectful to you in committee. I don't know what they're talking about. You seem like you are very well informed on your issue and you put a lot of seriousness into this. So I don't know why third parties outside this room are trying to inject stupid commentary on this. I feel like the conversation today was really good. So if I'm wrong on this, please speak with me afterwards if somebody said something that was inappropriate. But because you are a thoughtful and smart legislator, I have a specific homework assignment for you as well. Again, this is my role as a minority leader. There is a great book, because I know you care. It's by a gentleman by the name of Marvin Alasky. It's called The Tragedy of American Compassion. And it's not just for you, but members of the committee, because I know that you work in this area very closely. It's a book that helped shape my views on public policy. I think it would be great if you had a chance that you and I could talk about that book sometime. Not because I think you're uninformed or unprincipled or uneducated. I just think it's something that provides additional context to things. My last comments, Madam Chair, are that the Office of Legislative Auditor report has been referenced, and it should be noted, members, that in the nonprofit sector, we have pervasive noncompliance. Those are the words that were used in the report. They said that the agencies are failing to do the very basics of grant oversight, and shoveling more and putting, whether well-intentioned or not, putting more money into these programs without proper compliance and oversight is asking for trouble. I'll be voting no on the roll call vote today, but I would look forward to having that information from nonpartisan staff. And Representative Keeler, I hope you and I have a chance to talk about the new Garofalo Book Club that I'm trying to start up here at the legislature. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And with that, that is the end of member discussion, so I will turn it over to Representative Keeler. We definitely filled our time on these two bills, and they're important bills, and I'm really glad you were here to present your bill, Representative Keeler. Last word on your bill.
Thank you, Chair Olson and members. I would second that homework assignment. I have been serving in my communities both, but you heard me before talk about the food shelf, and in our shelters across this entire state, and really in the region. So I agree that all of us as public servants should and absolutely could together get out into spaces. And you'll be happy to know I'm a lifelong learner. I actually like graduated top in my class with my degrees. And so as long as it's on audiobook and I can listen to it on my drive back and forth, I'll add it to my list. But thank you, members, for the robust conversation. I do believe this is our job to have these conversations, to hold each other accountable in the work that we're doing. I'm a massive empath in this work, and sitting for 2 years to listen to the struggles, knowing that we had individuals testify in our committee that actually didn't live to see another birthday because we're not acting fast enough. And so this is not going to end everything, and I think it's going to be actually a really big fiscal note to see what we're doing to actually invest in preventing homelessness, because it's in all areas. It's in access to education, access to higher education, access to healthcare, transportation. I mean, the list really goes on and on, because if you look at the reasons why people end up homeless, it's a massive spread of issues that all of you sit at those tables at. So this is a small component. And Representative Novotny, I really do want to work with you on what you see or could see the future of around that program, as I am always open to all of these discussions. Pila Maye, and thank you so much for your time, Chair and members.
That I renew my motion that House File 444 be re-referred to the General Register, and there was a roll call, so the clerk will take the roll. Ms. Killian, seems to warm to say clerk.
Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Olson, aye. Vice Chair Edelson?
Aye.
Edelson, aye. Lead Garofalo?
No.
Garofalo, no. Representative Akam?
Aye.
Akam, aye. Representative Egbaje?
Aye.
Egbaje, aye. Representative Becker-Finn is excused. Representative Freiberg?
Yes.
Freiberg, aye. Representative Gomez?
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Representative Hassan?
Hassan, aye.
Hassan, aye. Representative Heintzman?
No.
Heintzman, no. Representative Hornstein?
Aye.
Hornstein, aye. Representative Howard?
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Cleborn?
Aye.
Cleborn, aye. Representative Creshaw?
No.
Creshaw, no. Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Lilly?
Lilly, aye.
Lilly, aye. Representative Moeller?
Aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, no. Representative Knorr?
Knorr, aye.
Knorr, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, no.
Novotny, no. Representative O'Neill?
No.
O'Neill, no. Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Pulowski, aye. Representative Petersburg?
No.
Petersburg, no. Representative Farr?
Farr, no.
Farr, no. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Schumacher?
No.
Schumacher, no. Representative Scott?
No.
Scott, no. Representative Joachim?
Joachim, aye.
Joachim, aye. Madam Chair, there are 17 ayes and 10 nays and one excused.
On 17 ayes and 10 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 444 has been re-referred to the General Register. So I will just note that if you have not yet and you want the paper copy of the governor's budget books, you should come by Leah Killian's desk. And for those that have seen them, yes, Harry is demonstrating. Make sure you grab all parts of it. It's not just one. It's the entire thing. And if you will, we'll have those there until Tuesday at 5 p.m. Tomorrow at 5 p.m. Otherwise, there is a link in the email that Owen sent. And with no further business before us, we are adjourned.